Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. House and Senate leaders are now trying to work out the differences between the two spending plans passed by each chamber. Both the House and Senate want to make more cuts to education and human services even after the deep cuts made in the last 4 years. Here to talk about the budget and the Moral Monday protests at the General Assembly is Representative Verla Insko from Orange County.
Well, Representative Insko, thank you very much for being with us. We know you're busy and we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the House budget. As budget negotiations are underway between House and Senate leaders, I want to ask you some specifics, but overall, what were your reactions to the House spending plan?
It wasn't as bad as the Senate spending plan. And so it's really easy to get caught up in saying, oh, well, you know, here, this is better and this is better. But there's still a lot that falls short in the House budget, even though it's much better than the Senate plan. The Health and Human Services team, I thought they were very accommodating. They wanted to hear the issues in the Health and Human Services budget, and they were very responsive. You know, they kept Right School open, and they didn't move pregnant women over to the exchange. They left them in Medicaid, as they should have. I was able to work with them really well, and I think they worked with providers, too, to make sure they had their ducks in a row. There's still a $20 million cut in the Health and Human Services budget from last year. If you want to take money out of the budget and you want to do it as silently as possible, you take an appropriation and you make it non-recurring. And so it was in last year's budget, it was non-recurring both years, but this year it doesn't appear anywhere. So if you have a non-recurring appropriation, you have to appropriate it again every year. So it's just disappeared this year. It's another $20 million cut from mental health services on top of the 78 we took before.
You have worked long and hard in Health and Human Services, and I guess a lot of these decisions this year are informed by decisions that weren't made in the budget. I guess the biggest one that people have heard about is the decision not to expand Medicaid in North Carolina.
Yes.
It cost us a lot of money and health care for
a lot of people. It was a budget item, you know, because it would have brought in a lot of extra money, would have filled a lot of holes, and paid for itself. We would have had to appropriate $10 million, but even appropriating $10 million to do some of the administrative costs, we would have had $60 million left over because of the new money that's coming in to fill some of the other holes. Plus, it's a jobs bill. But I have to say, the most important thing is I don't understand why anyone who has the opportunity to provide health care for 500,000 poor people, including a lot of kids, wouldn't do it. It's just mind-boggling. These people live in every single district we have. I have 10,000 people in Orange County that are not going to be covered because of that decision. And, you know, today, several of those people are very ill and need health care, and they don't have any health insurance. And I finally figured out that Medicaid isn't a welfare plan or a handout. It's an insurance program. It's insurance. When you have Medicaid, you have health insurance. And so they actually denied 500,000 or more people in North Carolina health insurance and forego, I think there were 23,000 jobs associated with that expansion, too.
You also obviously represent Orange County. The University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, is there. I saw where President Ross said recently of the House budget or the budget process in general that 10 of 11 southeastern states have actually increased spending on universities, and yet our legislature seems determined to cut it. It's just a matter of how much.
Those decisions are just really unwise decisions. It's like we're taking steps that will undermine our own state, undermine the ability of our state to move forward. Those cuts are going to affect the ability of some of our students to attend school, but also for us to retain faculty that attract grants. I mean, the NIH grants that come into the state are a huge part of our economy. And it's because of our research institutions, not just Carolina, but Carolina's, I think, is now the fourth in the nation for attracting NIH grants. And if we can't keep those professors and we can't bring in those graduate students because the tuitions for graduate students will be raised, all that money will go to other states, and the other states want that money. And they are taking steps to upgrade their graduate programs and their research faculty to attract those dollars.
What do you think accounts for the attacks on the university? Is it anti-intellectual bias? Is it they believe there are too many liberals there? Is it the role of government? Or how do you explain what seems to be an obvious error?
I hesitate to explain it because when there's no obvious answer and you start making assumptions, I always fill in with the worst possible scenario. I just fill in that blank with, but it doesn't make any. I think it's probably a combination of those things. I have to feel like I know that that Art Pope, the budget director. I have heard Art Pope is really what wants next step is to get the indirect costs into the general budget, into the budget, and that's probably now 40% of every grant that comes in. It's a huge amount of money. It's billions of dollars. And so I don't know why. So the university earns that money. It's a receipt, and they should be able to spend it paying for the overhead cost of the research projects. You know, you have to staff those buildings. You have to pay the custodial people. You have to pay the administrative staff and the electricity. There's a huge overhead that accounts for all those grants. So it seems so counterintuitive. It is mind-boggling.
One question that we haven't talked about yet in public education, is this the first time in history that a legislative body, the House or the Senate, has actually passed legislation to allow vouchers for private schools mm-hmm. with taxpayer money to private and religious schools? It's a big departure from our traditional philosophy of public education.
Yes, it's another decision, I think, that just has, in other states where it's been tried, it has not worked out well. You know, we spent years here, every year, making incremental improvements. You know, lowering class size, implementing Smart Start, moving our curriculum to STEM programs, increasing our teacher pay. And gradually, we sort of got up our student scores. Then several years, at the math scores, we had actually had more growth. We were at the top in the terms of amount of growth. So we were on the right track. I don't know why anyone would step off a track that was successful and start on a track that was going exactly the opposite way. Why would you want to undermine public education? This year they also redefined what it means to be at risk. You know, it used to be that if you were at 200% of the federal poverty level or lower, you were at risk. And now it's at 100% of the federal poverty level. So we're cutting a lot of students out of that pre-K program by just redefining what the word eligibility means.
What do you make of all these attacks on Medicaid rhetorically? I mean, everywhere, it's hard for the governor to talk without claiming that mm-hmm. Medicaid is the reason we can't do anything. Bill Coby, the chair of the State Board of Education, said recently he'd love to raise teacher pay, but we can't because of Medicaid. Mm-hmm.
Well, Medicaid does take a greater percent of the budget every year. That's true. And so we do need to control the cost of health care. And we have a program that does a very good job, and that's Community Care Network of North Carolina. And the way you control the cost of health care, one important way, is to not have any sick people. You keep people healthy, and then there are no health care costs that go with that. And so you want people to have insurance. So Medicaid, it does take a bigger portion of our budget every year, but we're trying to fix it the wrong way. It's an excuse. It's easy because Medicaid is very complicated, and you can always find something wrong with Medicaid. It changes every year. We do make mistakes in Medicaid every year. Every state does. So you can identify that as the problem. We have to fix Medicaid. We will never fix Medicaid because it's always changing. That gives them an excuse not to expand Medicaid. I think that they're really part of the anti-Obama. Anything that Obama does is bad. They're willing to hurt their own state in order to hurt Obama. And, you know, if we don't take Medicaid, it doesn't hurt Obama. The Affordable Care Act is in place, and it's going to expand, and it's going to survive. So it doesn't hurt Obama. It hurts all the people here at home that don't have insurance. Their constituents, our constituents. I'm hurting my own constituents by not being able to have that expanded.
What do you make of the Moral Monday protests?
They're growing. They're getting the word out across the state to some extent. And I think that that's been a frustration that we almost felt like that no one knew except people who were inside the Beltline in Raleigh, some of the big cities across the state. I have a son in Charlotte, so I go there. I think even there the issues are not covered very well in that metropolitan area. What's actually going on, what's happening, the long-term impacts of the decisions that are being made in this General Assembly are just astounding. People are very frustrated, and they need some way to say this is not right.
Well, thanks for what you're doing to say it and to try to keep some of these things from happening, and thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it.
Up next, the looming unemployment benefit cliff for 70,000 North Carolina workers. Stay tuned.